Welcome to Failure. I'm Ryan Kavanaugh. This is the place where, as they say, success has many fathers and failure has none. Well, failure has found a father. So I'm going to stop. Was there so you created Popstars?
Yeah,
and it was deemed a success.
Huge.
Okay. So now you're on the rise again.
Well, they
everything's feeling great.
They put it this way: if I went to get a haircut, yeah, there'd be a camera there.
Okay, so you're on top of the world. It's you're now
stupid. Yeah.
Simon Fuller says to you, "I want to take your show and adjust it and do it with one person versus a band, which is where you're at." And you say,
"I said, well, no, I can't do that. We've got Popstars." And that's really successful. I can't leave LWT. I've got a pension there and, you know, I'm successful there. And he said, basically, I will give you a signing on fee, which is like sports. It didn't happen in television. You don't get a signing on fee. And I said, how much?
He wants you to produce and judge.
Direct.
Direct.
Produce, judge.
It's your show. Yes, he's taking it anyway.
Yes,
so
yes. Okay. So I said, but this is Popstars. All you're doing is changing from a group to a single person. He said, well, no, because we'll do a performance show. Popstars was much more, it was darker. It was seeing, you know, agents come out of the woodwork to, you know, it was much more real reality. And he said, I want to make this more show business. He said, I want it to be like when we go for our prime minister's election, you know, it's been about two people. And when we get down to the final two, I want a bus going around London with this person's face all over it and a bus going around London, with, you know. I'm going, oh, that sounds like a great idea and everything. I said, well, I don't know what's going to happen with Screen Time, who are the company that owns the format of Popstars.
Right.
He said, well, no one's ever been sued for formats. I said, well, look, I'm still making a program here. You need to be careful. So we talked to Screen Time. Screen Time say, as long as you are not a judge on it, you can do what you like with your format.
Oh, because they don't want...
It's passing off.
Right, I get it.
So Popstars is one thing. Your Idol, as it was called then, is something else. So ITV, who are the station that broadcasts it, say, well, what we'll do is we'll do Pop Idol 1 year and then Popstars the next year.
Oh, interesting.
So I go, okay. So I decide I'm going to leave LWT and my pension behind, take the signing on fee and go and work for 19, which was Simon Fuller's company. I can't judge it, so we go back to Simon Cowell. We go to Pete Waterman, who's a great songwriter, Nicky Chapman, and a DJ called Dr. Fox. So there's going to be four judges. I'm ready to bring five people into the room each time. Simon Cowell says, no, I only want one person in the room. I said, Simon, we've got hundreds of people out there. This is going to take forever. He said, no, I only want one person. I said, but I want one person. So we then have to sort out how to just bring down the 500 people here to about 30. In order for a day's shoot, because you can only see about 30, 35.
So did you go outside and like audition outside randomly?
So the 500 we took into different rooms and auditioned them separately, which thank goodness we learned how to do that, which was now called Pop Idol.
Right. On the private.
Before we came to America, because here in America, we were getting 45,000 kids a day.
Wow.
So we learned how to do this sort of...
Like Dodger Stadium back filled room. Up each day.
Well, yeah, but we were at Cowboy Stadium. Pop Idol becomes a big success. And we're down to two boys at the end of it. One boy who took about 5 minutes saying his name. Gareth Gates, his name was.
He had a speech impediment.
Until he sang.
Wow.
And then it was perfect.
Those are the most amazing moments.
Why don't you sing your name? Which he said, I never thought about that. But this kid, good looking, stole people's hearts. And remember, my whole thing was find out about the people.
Backstory, because you
learned. Find the backstory.
So this goes back to
this
the failure.
Cares them.
Make sure
and
you
the
care.
Same as we did with pop stars. Care about them. See them getting drunk. See them say, no, I didn't have anything to drink. Show them drinking. Oh, this whole thing was about people. The whole thing was about people. And the same with Pop Idol now.
And that takes us back to your original failure.
Totally.
Had you not gone through that, you never would be at this place where you're like, this show
Absolutely.
Is only going to work.
It's about people.
About people.
Yeah.
Because that's what you didn't do the first time.
Correct.
And that's where the failure comes full circle.
Absolutely. And now we've got these two people, Gareth Gates and Will Young. Now, Will Young, Simon, one is terribly sort of like this, terribly chap, very, very sort of posh, say. And Simon said to him at one point, he sang a song, and he said, Simon said, that was very average. And for the first time ever, this kid turns around and goes, Simon, I don't think I can agree with you when you said I was average. He said, if I was anything but average. And it's like the whole country went, oh, he turned around to Simon. So now he's got his story. He is now recognized as the kid who spoke back. He's now recognized as the kid with the stutter.
Yep.
And we've now got two people that are voted every week to the top of it.
Wow.
And they're going to be against each other.
That's amazing.
Now, Simon hates this kid that's talked back to him. He's a big fan of Gareth. So now the whole country turns on poor Gareth because Simon supports him and they've gone for Will Young. It was a really interesting phenomenon.
You actually created emotion from, and it came from
Total.
A show that you learned that if you didn't create any emotion on.
Correct.
You've put an entire country in emotion.
Correct. It's now not just about the singing.
Yep.
It's about the support. And as Simon Fuller said, this was about creating two people like the prime minister. Who's going to be your next prime minister? Who is going to be your pop idol?
Yep.
And we were texting here in the UK. So there were telephone calls coming in, texts coming in, and postcards coming in. And I said to Simon, when he first said, we're going to get the public to vote. I said, well, the judges should do it. He said, no, I want the public deciding. I said, well, that's been done for years. That won't work.
Boy, did it work.
Boy, did it work. So now...
You guys kept the cell phone carriers alive.
And in England, we charged 50 pence.
Per text.
A text.
Yeah.
Which the company was getting.
That's amazing.
So now we get a phone call from America. Evidently, the ratings are enormous. So Rupert Murdoch has now called his daughter, who lives in England. What do you think about this show, Pop Idol? And she said, oh, really good. He said, do you think it would work in America? And she said, well, if you take the nasty Englishman, yeah.
She said, if you do take him.
Yeah, it's going to work.
So for those of you who don't know, Rupert Murdoch is, well, just stepped down, but he was the most powerful, again, person in media. Nigel, you're jumping from powerhouse to powerhouse.
Yeah.
He ran all of Fox. He owned Fox, actually, not just ran it. His son now runs it. But Wendy, his daughter, ran all the UK.
Elizabeth.
Elizabeth. Wendy was his wife. Whoops, don't want to mix those up. Elizabeth ran all of the UK and was also one of the... You get a call from Elizabeth or Rupert, they're buying your show. That's like, yeah. You've made it. You're game over.
So we go to America. Simon Cowell, Simon Fuller go to America to talk about Idol. ABC will not take the pitch.
And that's ABC was a Disney show.
Yeah. Fox turn it down, NBC turn it down. Everyone turns it down.
Wow. Why wouldn't they take the pitch? They just said, we don't.
No idea. It was a singing show, basically. It was just a sing. They just saw it as a singing talent show. We've got plenty of those. We had Star Search. We had this. We don't that. We don't need another one. So now we're hugely successful. The ratings have hit America now, and now Rupert calls up.
So just to make clear, as the show's starting, you're out there trying to pitch to networks, and they're like, they won't even take the pitch. It's just another show. Now you're successful. Now you're getting the most powerful people in the business saying, calling. We want it, of course. Right.
So we find that Fox have spent all of their summer money, and they haven't got any money. So we might take seven shows if you can find sponsors for it. So now I'm in 19 offices, and I've got Simon Fuller and his attorney and myself. And it's quite late at night for us. America, it's probably lunchtime or something. And I'm put on the phone to a guy called Rick Rock from PepsiCo. And Rick Rock, I thought, I wonder if he was in the Flintstones.
I was going to say, it sounds like that.
And he said, okay. He said, well, tell me about your show. And I said, well, it's a vocal talent show. Oh, yeah, we've had a lot of those. I said, yeah, yeah. But with this, it is different because, you know, normally if your singer isn't good enough, your judges will say, I'm sorry, it's not right for us today, but
good luck.
You're wearing a beautiful dress
yeah.
or your hair's looking great or something to sweeten it up. I said, we don't sweeten it up. Simon will say something like, now I know why God created earwax. or you sound like a bagload of cats being thrown off the Empire State Building. I mean, you know, he's going to say these. And the guy said, you're going to tell these singers that they ain't good? I said, yeah, we're telling them they're really lousy. And I've got the attorney, the English attorney going, don't say too much. Don't say too much. He said, well, I don't think Pepsi's going to be interested in telling singers that they're no good. He said, maybe you should talk to Coca-Cola.
And you did.
And we did. And Coca-Cola came on board as a sponsor. And then CAA, the agency here, got Ford Motors involved in it.
Wow.
And we started off, it started off by saying, yeah, okay, we're going to do seven shows.
Was this Kevin Hevein, Brian Lortier, or was this Ron Meyer, Michael Ovitzier?
No, Brian Lord.
Yeah, they're great. I love Brian and Kevin.
Yeah. We made more than seven shows. We did 13 shows. I think, on the first one. And immediately they wanted a special out of Vegas. A week after we finished doing the live shows, they wanted it. So it was a rush out of Vegas, throw this hour's show together in Death Valley in Vegas, shoot it outside. I mean, it was just a crazy time. My, what's the name came out? My discs came out of my neck. I was wandering around with an arm up here, like looking like I wanted to go to the bathroom. Please, miss, can I go to the bathroom? it was a crazy time. And then immediately straight on to season two. And it was all about, even with Simon, the great thing, people say to me, how come American Idol made so many stars and The Voice doesn't? Because The Voice has some great singers. Yeah. I mean, there's no question, really great singers. It's just a different format. And even with Simon, the focus was on the contestant.
Right.
He would say to them, you stink. It wouldn't be interplay
the
between
voice
the
was
judges.
Much more about the judges.
Yeah. And it's going back to the failure. I want all the concentration on the talent.
That's it.
I want to know their stories. I want to see Carrie Underwood in the farm. I want to know where she came from. I want to know that Kelly Clarkson was here 2 months ago and failed in Los Angeles and went home. And then we picked her up and brought her back. And now she's going to be the next American Idol. It was incredible because we also had the problem with split. You weren't... texting.
Right. You weren't voting.
You just weren't texting in America at this time.
Oh, right.
So we had to teach. Ryan Seacrest is literally there with a phone saying, and this is how you text on your telephone. Amazing when you think it was 2000. 2001, that America was not texting in that sense.
Yesterday.
And we couldn't use the phone calls because the charge, the one, we couldn't charge for a phone call because it was the... No, it was the porno lines.
Oh, the 976.
Yeah, whatever. They were. And so you call up and say, I'd like to vote for Kelly Clarkson. What are you wearing, little girl? it would have been awful.
Oh, my gosh.
So...
Oh, that was the only services that you said that you could call through. Yeah. Oh, my gosh.
We've got Steve Jobs calling up, saying Apple want to get on board. We'll teach them how to do this and do that. And it was literally...
I remember you had that big Apple campaign.
Yeah. The world suddenly changed for us. And we had to worry about voting West Coast and East Coast.
Because of the hours.
Because in England, we literally came on the air 2 hours after the show had finished with the result. So here we had to split the nights.
So I ask you a question and before we move on, because this is really... So you've taken this failures in the past and you've put it all towards the present. And you're now on top of the world. You've created American Idol or co-created American Idol. And you literally have the number one show on TV, not just a show. You've created a cultural phenomenon that's changed not just TV, but... the music business, talent show, everything as we know it around that.
The president of the Academy said you could be justified in talking about American television as before American Idol and after American Idol.
I agree with him. I mean, that's it is.
Because your reality shows, there weren't that many, if any.
No, we had, because I remember because I was managing Bob Evans at the time and I was pitching a reality show with him. And prior to that, all we had was Simple Life because I hired Bunham Murray to produce Bob Evans' show that
Simple
ABC
Life came
turned
on
down.
After American Idol.
So we didn't even, that, Simple Life was technically the first reality show.
Right, you were
even before that.
Yeah. Survivor beat us.
Yes, there was, but Survivor was a.
And The Real Life. Was it The Real Life something?
You're talking about an MTV? They had the one on MTV where they all live together in a room. Real World. Yes, that was on. So anyway, not to interject.
Well, you talk about Andrea. She immediately gets on board with American Idol and wants another show that Fuller's gone in and sold and pitched called All American Girl.
All American.
All right. So now we've got this huge success, and I guess he could have sold anything anywhere.
He pretty much could have.
So I say, well, he said, I want you to go in, and I said, well, what is All American Girl? He said, just make a show with, you know, all American girls and test them for intelligence, cooking, talent, singing, dancing, whatever you want to do. So we go in and. I bring over another two English producers, one of whom now is the producer of Dancing with the Stars, really good producer, and the other is the producer of The Masked Singer. So they've been hugely successful here. So they come over, and they say, what's the format? I said, I have no idea. I don't know how he even sold it. There isn't a format here. But it's intelligence, talent, cooking, how good do they make an apple pie? I said, think parochial, you know, think. So they put together a little intelligence quiz, one of which the questions was, what two countries border America? I think possibly the worst answer we got was California and France.
No, you did not.
California and France. And at that point, it went down to cooking and talent. And it just became a talent show, really. It failed miserably. They put it out at 11 o'clock on a sort of Saturday night. They shut it down quickly. So with all of the success of American Idol, we have now got this complete and utter failure of All American Girl.
So you're at the peak of your, like, just everything's just, you could sell, as you said, you could sell anything anywhere. You've changed television. You've changed music. You've changed everything. Next show that comes out, boom, total failure.
Yeah.
And there's an old saying I know of is you're only as good as your last movie or you're only as good as your last show. Did that affect you or was Idol so big that...
That I was moving straight into Idol season 2. So it was Conrad James, I'm so sorry. Come on, come and join us on American Idol season two.
Right.
While you're here.
Right.
So they came on and did that. We start, and it was the season of Reuben Studdard and Clay Aitken.
Oh, yeah.
Tall Clay, chubby Reuben, spaghetti and the meatball, we used to call them.
While you're on this, one of the things you know you'd mentioned earlier that I thought was really important is you said one of the things that you did in season one Idol, and I'm just carried through, which I saw, but you just said it, you know, as you were talking about it, is you showed these people, so important to show them failing a month before in this barn, like, you know, whatever, and this bar failing, and you're then now they're the Idol. Like, tell me more about that, because it seems like, to me, what was so about Idol, why people love it, is
the American dream, for goodness sake.
It's the story of failure.
But you've forgotten what the American dream is on television.
Yeah.
And that is, you're a burger flipper one day, you're a big star the next day. Right. And it was introducing people and their talent. It's a springboard. There's no guarantee you're going to be successful after that program is over.
Yeah.
So it is just...
But isn't it
bringing back the American dream to America?
But aren't you telling, I mean, the way I see it is I'm watching a story of people who fail and fail, but they love what they do so much, meaning, you know, singers, that they don't give up.
They're humiliated to a certain degree, which is why America didn't really like Simon Cowell in that first season. We had to put on a security team because there was a father outside New York hotel where we were auditioning with a baseball bat threatening to take Simon out. They failed to get on the program. So that's part of it as well. Because don't forget, in those days, we used to show the really bad ones.
I remember
William
the lines.
Hung. Do you remember William Hung? Failed so badly, could not sing in tune.
That
was successful because he put out a really out of tune Christmas record that everybody bought.
I remember he failed. You guys showed this kid who literally couldn't sing a note, if this is the one I remember. Skinny guy?
Well, she bangs, he sang.
Yes, that's
Asian,
right.
Little Asian.
Yeah, skinny Asian guy, I remember. And he couldn't sing.
Yeah.
And you guys put him out on a kind of pedestal to be like, look at how awful this person is.
See, when we first started, the first few seasons, people believed they could sing. Their parents had told them they're great singers, or their friends had told them. Later on, as we got into like season 7 and 8, college kids had come along pretending they couldn't sing just to get on the show. And there's a, you know, huge difference, you know, wandering out looking like the Statue of Liberty, getting to the center of the room and Simon would just go, no thanks. They'd turn around and walk straight out. I mean, we would use those because they were fun.
Right.
But there was no reason. You want people to believe that they can sing. That's when they put their heart into it and are really terrible.
So... what does that tell you, kind of, because to me, when I look at that and I look at Idol, it's the epitome of, like, because to want to be a singer and to push through that dream, that's what something that you have to just believe so much in yourself and never give up, because you're told, like being an actor, no all the time.
Yeah.
And you're failing every day over and over and over and over. And, you know, you're still doing it. And in Idol, oftentimes, I think you had people who spent their whole lives being told, no, you're a failure, right? And then you're turning them into, you're either telling them, yes, you are a failure, or no, you're amazing.
Yes and no. I don't think a lot of them never looked on themselves as a failure. They believed they were rude, a lot of them. We cut a lot of the rudeness out. I mean, vile stuff, a lot.
Interesting.
That they become, you know, they're tough and they're hardened.
They're hardened, but... to be, if they were coming on that show, they were to that point in time, they had failed at what they wanted to do because they're trying to use the show to make it.
A lot of them were young. You know, we were taking 16-year-olds.
That's true. I guess here. What was the oldest person you had on Idol that made it?
I suppose Larry, pants on the ground guy. Can't remember how old he was, but it was just a fun song that he'd written that we said, okay, we'll put him on.
But did he make it? What's the oldest person like became successful off of Idol?
No, I couldn't tell you, right? It was 16 to 29, I think, was our.
So like a 29-year-old, generally, who has not made it in singing is not expected to make it. But did you have any 28 or 29-year-old that became...
Again, you know, you say that, and I think you're wrong. Just that was our rule. Susan Boyle was in her late 40s, early 50s when she did Got Talent and became a big star out of that. So exposure is the one thing that I truly believe in. Give as many people as possible the opportunity of showing the world who they are on whatever program, whether it's an inventor, whether it's a singer, whether it's a dancer, whether it's a choreographer. I mean, these choreographers that I had on So You Think You Can Dance had been successful in their own right. When they came on that, it was the exposure that turned them into superstars, you know.
So let's actually move maybe, you know, so American Idol, crushing it.
Well, yeah, but season two, we're doing really well until my heart attack.
Oh, please tell me.
So no, just I was editing season two in the edit suite with Bill Durand.
How old were you at this point?
51.
Okay.
Heart attack.
You just collapsed?
Not really. I just felt like I had indigestion and I'd had to lie down and I was still shouting out, take two frames out of there. I mean, they joke about it. They put up Nigel Lithgow's cardiac suite.
Oh my God.
On the edit. So it all happened in 1 year. It happened 2003. So it was heart attack. I got through that very quickly. Was back at work in about 10 days. Did season two. Season three, we go to Hawaii, come out of the auditions in Hawaii, and my appendix explodes. I get peritonitis. They remove 17 foot of intestine. And my wife divorces me, all in 1 year. So I lost the back of my heart, 17 foot of intestine and a wife, and I miss my intestine.
Okay, so this is a really good perspective on life, because here you are, probably as most of us would be, you've spent your whole career to get here.
Oh,
you've hit the point that anybody, the biggest
success
thing, you
know, and financially ridiculous. I earned in 4 weeks what I earned in a year in England.
And you're now also, like you said, you've changed television. You're the person that's changed television. You can get any show made. You've hit everything you probably ever thought you would, and then some. Now you've had a heart attack. Your wife leaves you. You have your gallbladder removed. And tell me at that point.
My gallbladder was only 3 months ago.
Oh, sorry. I meant your appendix. I'm thinking gallbladder, because
it exploded.
So where are you? Where's your head now? Like you think life is so important about, because I know how I was, you know, when I had financial success and then all of a sudden realized, wait a minute, there's this other stuff.
Everyone thought I was dying, to be frank with you. People were flying in from England to say goodbye to me.
Did you think you were dying?
Yes. It was 7 weeks nil by mouth, lying in Cedars Sinai. I was only starting to believe it because other people were saying, just want to say goodbye and it's been really lovely knowing you. And I'm going, Jesus. Oh, gee, all right.
So it's an interesting play, because that goes into a failure in a way, which is like, was there ever a moment where you were feeling like, I failed at paying attention to life because I was so focused on work, or were you content, or what were you feeling?
Well, no, there's a whole reflection that comes later on in life, really, of realizing, you know, going way back to choreographing, that I choreographed my life away at one point where I wasn't really seeing my children. I wasn't going on holiday with my kids and my family because I was too busy choreographing shows. That I was sending them to private schools, trying to make the money up to pay for that. So there's a whole crisis during that choreographing.
Did you realize this as you were going through the health scare?
Yeah.
And so you started to have regrets about not being there as much for your family?
Yeah.
And tell me about that. Do you feel like you failed as a dad? Did you feel like, what was it that you...
Well, it balanced itself. I think that's protection. It balances itself because you feel as though you're a failure because you've not been with your kids, but you've made the money so that your kids could go to good schools. And so it sort of balances itself.
So you're laying in this hospital bed now and you're starting to believe because of all your wonderful friends telling you, nice to know you.
No, but flying in, you know, it's not just like a telephone call. We just want to see him. Can we come into the...
So you're laying there and you're starting to believe that this may be it. And you're... Is this all of a sudden, you're feeling guilt about kids? What do you tell me what you're feeling? Because I think that's something that's like,
I don't think it's guilt. I just think it was, I suppose, the very fact that I'd created this pinnacle of my life. It had happened. I can't say I created it. I was lucky enough.
Yeah, you created it, but
no, I was lucky enough to be it. Yeah. It was a lot of luck. And then, you know, you need the luck and then you need the talent to stay there and everything else. And you need the luck not to be found out.
I would say the same thing, but you know what? It's better to be lucky than smart.
Yeah. And then to have it all taken away.
And that, tell me about that moment. So this has all been taken away because if you're not there, then that success doesn't matter. What's going through your head? Obviously, your family's going through your head. You know, what was the hardest thing for you? And what did you struggle with? And what did you have to come through? Because that, to me, is like, you can't compare any failure to, I might be dying, right?
I missed an American Idol Christmas show. And it really pissed me off that someone else was going to be doing it.
Was that your biggest regret then?
Yes.
So you knew you were in the right place. So you have the ultimate success, and then you have this like the craziest of setbacks you can have, which is a super health scare.
Yes.
But yet you know you're in the right spot because the only thing you're most annoyed about is that
you missed a show.
But you're also saying you had to kind of check yourself of like, thinking back when you were doing a lot of choreographing and trying to put, you know, I'll call it food on the table, so to speak, but money.
But you get through it because, I mean, the Japanese have got a great saying, I'm sure you know it, you fall down 8 times, pick yourself up 9 times.
Yeah.
It's what life is. It's not just about show business. It's about everything else that happens in life.
You've got to say life is the shit that happens when you're waiting for life to happen.